OUXers. Today I have such a juicy conversation for you that is perfect for any New Year introspection. Karen Huell and I go deep into OUXing mental health, life, your own personality, your feelings. We get super esoteric, but we also have moments of being really freaking practical. We talk about OUXing your portfolio to better express yourself and also how OUX is not for everyone, and that's okay. I absolutely love this conversation, and I am so pleased to share it with you. But before we jump into it, I want to capitalize on the new year, new you vibes that are in the air right now and invite you to reinvent how you think about your work and your role in your professional life with the OUX Masterclass, this 22-hour online course. Enrolling in this course and joining this community of nerds has been so transformative for hundreds of UX professionals and product people. If you don't want one more year of avoidable rework, if you're tired of feeling ill-equipped to tackle the insane amounts of complexity thrown your way, and if you're just done with designing on shaky assumptions and guesswork, then now is the time to make a radical change. Eugenia S. says, OUX is a philosophy that has changed my mind about what a design process should be. Daniela V. says, everything about this course has changed my approach to designing. Julia L., OUX has completely changed how I approach my work. Tara G. says, the lens I view digital systems through has changed, and it is more connective and cohesive. Ryan G. says, OUX and the Orca process are game changers and are an amazing way to create a common language and shared understanding of the system and its parts. So if you are ready for a big change for the better, go to OUX.com/masterclass to enroll today and get 2024 off to an incredible start. Okay, let's go talk to Karen. Welcome to the Object-Oriented UX Podcast, a podcast about tackling complexity head-on, gracefully organizing massive amounts of information, and designing scalable, future-proof, and of course, naturally intuitive object-oriented user experiences. An OUXer is a powerful blend of information architect, business analyst, facilitator, and UX strategist. If this sounds like you or what you aspire to, you are so in the right place. I'm Sophia Prater, UX designer, chief evangelist of Object-Oriented UX, and your host. Let's jump into it. What's up, OUXers? Today we have Karen Huell, who is a content designer, information architect, and a certified OUX consultant based in Phoenix, Arizona. She's currently wrapping up the first cohort of the advanced OUX program that is running during cohort 9, and she's mentoring her pod of 6 wonderful strategists-to-be. So Karen was certified in cohort 7, came back and mentored in cohort 8, and now is back again, wrapping up cohort 9 with this new program. And we've just been hanging out. We've been hanging out pretty much all of 2023. And it's been awesome getting to know you.
Yeah.
So when Karen's not wrangling complexity with client websites, she's watching sci-fi and hanging out with her miniature Shih Tzu, Mr. Pickles, who is here, present and accounted for, joining us with on the podcast. And I have had the pleasure of getting to know Mr. Pickles as well on several Zoom calls over the year. So today we are here to talk about content design and OUX, but also talk about OUXing your life, like applying OUX and the Orca methodology outside of digital products and websites and digital environments and our day-to-day job. How can we actually take OUX and use it to help get clarity for all the complexity that is going on upstairs in these little noggins of ours? How can we actually use this to kind of pick it apart and understand more and put it back together in a way that we can really just use it to understand ourselves? And we've been talking about this on and off throughout the year. So I'm just excited to have this conversation and dedicate some time to really getting into it. So Karen, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm very excited to be here.
So I want to go back. I want to back up because, yes, I want to dive into OUXing your life and how we can apply OUX outside of our business. But first, can we back it up And can you tell us, what is your OAUX origin story? How did you get here? Why are you here now? How did you come to be on this podcast today? Where did it all start?
yes, my origin story. Okay, so a few years back, I was working, it was my very first job as a senior content designer. So I had kind of transitioned a little bit of out of like the editorial and marketing space. I got my very first job as a content designer with a textbook and educational company, real, real big. An enormous taxonomy of books and digital products and all these different things. And when I came in, they were just about to kick off this massive migration product or project, as in taking like 8 different digital products and then smashing them into a single interface, which is something that you hear happening a lot these days, lots of those. And it, long story short, I ended up having to take a 3-month hiatus, an FMLA hiatus, because I completely burnt out. I completely crumbled during that job. And it was really because I was thinking so much harder than I had to. And I was so overwhelmed with not just the complexity of the projects, but everything else that went around it, like the people, managing some of the issues with like my colleagues, my bosses. I have ADHD and I'm a little bit autistic, so I struggle a lot to make sense of really complex situations like that. So in that 3-month hiatus where I was not working and just laying on my couch trying to evolve, heal, I realized, okay, I need to do something. I need to do something, anything to put me in a position where this doesn't happen again. And so I had a background in content modeling, which later I would discover is basically a more specific version of OUX. But when I discovered OUX, I don't even remember exactly how it happened. I think it was a podcast or a video or something like that. It was not the amazing, very famous dinosaur Medium article, like most people, how they usually discover it. That's something I read later.
The Alyssa Part article, the 2015 Alyssa Part article.
Yes. All right, that's the one, the 2015. So
yes. Shout out to Alyssa Part for putting OUX on the scene, getting that first diatribe out there.
And so many people discovered it that way. I think that I discovered it through seeing somebody using it, I believe. I'm trying to remember back. But what I do know is that it was an immediate light bulb of like, oh my God, this is it. This is what I need. This is the superpower that I need. And so I jumped in real hard. Like I'm, you know that, Sophia, that I came in to cohort 7. I did a custom project because I couldn't be held down. And I put in,
which is not allowed anymore. You were like, great, but we've had some custom projects go off the rails. So now you have to be getting recertified to do your custom project.
Oh yes. Because like, I was like, and now thinking back, I'm like, wow, it would have been so much easier to just do one of the design challenges. But instead, I did a custom project. I had Marissa as my mentor, who is amazing. And it clicked for me almost immediately. It was similar enough to content modeling and some of the content modeling work I had done prior. But what I was able to see its connections to all these other aspects of design. I could see how it could apply to UI. I could see how it could apply to project management and scoping. And so when I got started with OUX, it was kind of my way of being able to translate across all those spaces. And so when I finally came back to work, I was calmer because I could see, I say this a lot to my mentees, I could see the matrix. I could see what everything was made of, why it worked the way that it did, which allowed me to like manipulate and use those systems to do things better. But at the same time, I was using that same concept to kind of OUX my own life because I was struggling with my own mental health and my own ability to like make sense of all these things I was feeling and thinking. So it kind of all happened all at once. 2023 was a big year for OUX for me.
Oh yeah. Well, that was 2022, right?
Oh gosh. I guess that was 2022.
Yeah. It's still 2020. Yeah. 2020 and 2023 was a big year for OUX for you too.
This year forever now.
So if you look back on that project that had you laying on a couch for months afterward, like if you had OUX on that project, how might have that project gone differently?
Oh my gosh, I think it would have been so much easier. You know, I don't know if it would have solved all the problems, right? It wouldn't have solved every single issue that we had in it, but it would have made me calmer. It would have made me be able to make the right decisions at the right time and not feel so overwhelmed with having to know everything all the time. That's really, I think, what OUX and the ORCA process did for me, is help me recognize that these things take time. You need to take a few runs at them. You need to take a few swings at things to really understand complexity. And it would have armed me, I think, to be able to have a lot more effective conversations and communication with colleagues, because what OUX does is it doesn't solve all your problems, but it helps you ask the right questions to solve those problems. And so it's something that happened a lot for me was, I know this is wrong, but I can't articulate why. I think it would have changed that for me. It would have put me in a position where I could have helped people see gaps versus railing on and on and on about things that I was seeing before, you know, shit hit the fan kind of down the line. So
yeah,
I think that's
yeah.
probably the biggest difference.
So I hear like so many people say it helps them give them confidence at work. And I think that confidence and calm goes together. Like if you feel more confident that like, I've got good tools, I'm handling this the best that I possibly can, and I know that I have professional grade tools for this job, it's like when it does get hard, you realize like, you know what? That's okay. It's okay. It's not because like, I'm doing something wrong, or like it gives you that, like with that confidence, then you can just calm the hell down a little bit and breathe and just be like, I've got the tools to do this. I can methodically, and then like knowing what to do next too. It's like when it's like, what do I do in this situation? You have this bag of tricks that you can pull from and be like, oh, like if we just apply relationship requirements to this is one relationship that's really sticky here, and like go through my cat saving fire department, and we just need it here, we just need it there, and like being able to kind of be actually more flexible. Like people look at this process and they're like, oh my gosh, 15 steps, like so much structure, so rigid, and it is literally the opposite of rigidity. It can help you be more flexible and more nimble when you're navigating all the complexity, and that helps you calm down.
Yes. And I think when people think about really effective leaders that they've worked under, those people are almost always calm. They're calm in the storm. They can see things for what they are ahead of time. And I think a big thing with ORCA specifically for me is that it allowed me to not put off, but to wait to make certain decisions until I was ready to make that decision. And I think being a younger, newer designer in those big organizations, it can feel really easy to feel pressured to make a decision right away. It takes an enormous amount of confidence to say, I don't know yet. Give me a little time to work with this idea, or to, I need more data to understand the answer to that question. And that's really what it gave me the tools for doing, is saying, you know what, I'm not sure, but I have a way to figure it out. I think that was the big thing.
And to know that when you say, I'm not sure, it's not your fault, right? Like we can think like, oh, saying I don't know is just, it's almost like stigmatized. It's almost as bad. It's like, if I don't know, it's because I've done something wrong. And I think that this can give you the confidence, like I've done my homework here and I still don't know. So it's totally okay for me to say that.
Yes. Yes. It's huge. Makes a big, big difference to be able to confidently say, I don't know, and that's not on me. It's that we still just need to figure this out a little bit together.
Right. Yeah. I like how you use the metaphor being calm in the storm. I was actually like, right before you said that, I was just thinking about a boat in really choppy waters. And it's like, just, you're in the choppy waters. You're not going to be able to fix the choppy waters. You're not going to be able to like make the storm go away, but you can feel confident that you have the best fucking boat for those waters, that you're like, I've got a good boat here. And you know what? Like, I know that I'm not going out on these waters, you know, in a little dinghy that's gonna
like
fall
a
apart.
Crappy raft that you had to build. Yeah. Like, this isn't Survivor. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you got a good boat. So you could actually be calm. You could be like, oh, this storm is like interesting. This is, you could be more interested in it. You could be more curious about it because you're not so scared of it. It's like bring on the complexity. This can be really fun, actually, because I've got a good boat to navigate these waters.
Yes, you have somewhere safe to be. You have a safe space to exist so that you can be curious. It's funny that you say curious, because I think that is the antithesis of fear, is that if you can be curious about something, it deactivates that feeling of overwhelm and fear. And that translates well beyond digital products, well beyond digital systems, and very much into life and feelings and all the things that are very hard to navigate and make sense of.
Yeah, it can help you detach a little bit. It's like that detachment of being like, oh, well, isn't that interesting that that person rejected me, or that thing that I really wanted didn't actually work out. You can just kind of say, huh, well, what can I learn from that? That's interesting, instead of like going down a spiral.
100%, because spirals are all about that lack of control. I have no control. And when you kind of are able to step back and say, I don't have control over this, that's true. Being able to really identify the things that you do have control over and the things that you don't, which anyone who's ever been to therapy knows that's exactly what you're spending a lot of time doing, is identifying, delineating between what you have control over and what you don't, and being able to let go of the things that you don't have control over completely.
Yep. Yep. So when you started, like, this was like kind of all happening at once, and you, it sounds like you like very quickly started seeing how you could apply OUX and the ORCA process to your own life, to your own mental health. Like, what were the first glimmers of that? What did that look like?
Oh, it's so funny. I think the universe aligned for me, because I was just seeing patterns. Around the same time, I was starting to dig into some real work with my therapist. I had already been working with her for a while, but she was starting to push me into some really uncomfortable spaces where she was challenging some of my beliefs. She was challenging some of the patterns that I had that I wasn't able to really see and identify. And she was asking me to delineate between feelings and facts. And I got to tell you, if you suffer with codependency and people pleasing, those two things very much feel like the same thing. So for me, it started to allow me to understand like object instancing and understanding objects and the relationship between those two objects and how all together those things form a unified whole, which is the definition of a system. That's really where it started to click of, oh, wait, this feeling is not reality. I can have this feeling and it's just more data to tell me how I'm responding to or relating to this other thing in the system, which is the fact. And so it allowed me to really back up and see things for what they were. Like I keep saying, like seeing the matrix, I say that to my mentees all the time. It let me see how the system in my mind was working and then start to understand how they were working together. Yes, they were two different things: feelings, facts, people, me, two different things. But the relationships between them was really what was driving some of these issues that I was having, and that I had control over the relationships between these things, as long as I understood those two things and what they were and how they were different. That was huge.
So, and it's so interesting, because like, I'm like a broken record saying, like, what are the number one questions that I find myself asking subject matter experts and asking stakeholders when I'm initially trying to figure out a system is like, are these two things the same thing? Or are these two things different things? So I got think X and things Y. They like feel like they might be synonyms, but they feel like also like in certain contexts, they're not synonyms. So, okay. Then they're like, oh no, those are two different things. Okay. Can you describe the relationship between those things? Because often when we get the things mixed up, facts and feelings, when we get the things mixed up, it's because they are distinct things, but they have a really integral relationship. The relationship between them is so important. So then it comes into like understanding that those things are different, and then really analyzing the relationship between those things.
Yes.
So what did that look like when you were like, okay, facts, feelings, two different things, other people, very different. There's a relationship between other people, the people in my life, and the facts about them and the feelings I have about them. Mm-hmm. What kind of like relationships did you find out, or like how did you dig into the relationships between facts and feelings?
It was, I think, recognizing that I had more control over what those relationships looked like than I realized. And it was really about boundaries. I think we talk a lot about boundaries. You hear a lot of people talk about boundaries, but they don't fully understand what that means. And boundaries are really just a thing that you use to help manage the relationship between things. And for me, it was recognizing that I could set a boundary. I could sever a connection. I could sever a relationship if I found over time that it did not serve me. So being able to back up and look at, when this happens, I feel this. Why do I feel that? Is there something I can change about the relationship that will short circuit that pattern, that groove that I've dug into my brain that makes these two things connected in this way? And so it put me in a position where I was able to almost design my life in a way so that the system itself worked better, or to disrupt the system that I had for myself that wasn't serving me anymore. And that was a really powerful feeling of like, okay, I don't need to cut this person out, or I don't need to completely remove this from my life. I can change and adapt the relationship between those two things, me and this other person, me and this scenario, me and this job. And that can over time make the system work better. I think if anyone is familiar with attachment theory, I'm an avoidant attacher, which means if I get overwhelmed, I cut and run. So it allowed me to deconstruct that pattern of what if instead of just severing, I could adapt, I could better understand that relationship and then change the way that the system worked over time versus feeling like the only way to fix things was to cut and run. That was probably the biggest aha moment that I had, was the amount of control I actually had over the way that I interacted with the people and the things around me.
When you were talking about boundaries and control, one of the big realizations that I had this year, this idea of giving people their power back and how much I was taking way too much responsibility for certain situations. So if I think about there's a situation, there's people in this situation. This situation has many people, right? Let's just say the situation has three other people in it. We're sitting at a dinner table, right? And maybe my role was the organizer. I'm the one that brought these people together, right? So I did the organization, but even some of these people don't know each other. So they don't have a relationship. What I would find myself doing, my relationship to the situation was of 100% responsibility to make sure everyone is having a good time. And realizing this, that wait a second, once we're at the dinner table, maybe I sent the text messages, maybe I picked out the restaurant, maybe I got people there because I do like to organize things. I love bringing people together. That is where my responsibility ends. Once we're all sitting at the dinner table, at the restaurant, wherever, I have literally 25% responsibility if there are three other people there, that this is going to be a fun evening, right? And I would end up if two people didn't hit it off or there was a lull in the conversation, my anxiety would go up. I would start feeling like this is my fault, and realizing holy shit, it's not my fault. I'm actually taking the power away from these three other people who are functioning adults, right? That have decided to be here and chose to be here. And yet I am my relationship to the situation. I can change my relationship to the situation. I can reevaluate it and be like, I am only 25% responsible for this situation right here.
Exactly. And that's a really hard thing to do. If you are seeing yourself like, I am my feelings are me, versus no, this is just data to help me better understand how I need to work with this system. And so when you're dealing with other people, you don't have control over the things that they're going to say and do, because they are their own instance. They are their own person. They are their own entity outside of you. And though you can have an impact on them, of course, because there's a relationship between the two of you, ultimately it goes two ways. You can provide feedback in one direction, but ultimately there is that reciprocal nature of the relationship where then they have a responsibility to a certain degree to meet you where you are. And if they can't, that's where it really comes in, is when they can't or they don't or they won't, that's where you get to make decisions about where you put your energy and where you put your time. Mm-hmm. And that was a big one for me. I think a lot of people that deal with codependency, it's very hard to differentiate between those two things, because the feeling comes up, we make assumptions about what that feeling is trying to tell us. And when you're fully in it with fear and codependency, you can't be curious about it because you can't see it for what it is. When you're able to back up, map it out and see, oh, look at all this space between these two entities and everything that's going on between them. Of course, I'm using my hands to describe this and our listeners can't see it, but just know I'm doing things with my hands.
You're showing a system model, basically.
Yeah, I'm just like system modeling right now. I'm drawing little boxes, little arrows.
System modeling in the air.
Exactly. And being able to system model your own life just to understand, oh, wait, these two things are not the same thing. It is incredible how healing that can be, just mapping it out, drawing a box, writing a word in it, drawing another box, writing a word in it, and then connecting it with a line and describing what that line means. That's huge, because it helps process it in a way that I think can be really hard to do when you're really in it with your own mind, and which is why I think all designers should be mapping out their own life. Like, use those skill sets to be able to see what's going on in your own mind so you can get curious about it.
And like, I'm thinking about just awareness, right? Naming things and having, like, this is what we do at work. It's like, let's just be more aware about the work that we're actually doing. Like, let's make sure, let's be aware about the language that we're using. Are we using the same word to describe three things? Are we using three different words to describe the same thing? Let's gather some awareness here so that we can design better products. We can communicate better to each other. This awareness can have so much translate into our own life of like, oh, that's a feeling. That's a fact. That over there is a thought. Like, so for me, like the difference between thoughts and feelings, and like, is this like, you know, is this an intuitive feeling that I'm getting in my body versus like, is this a thought that is coming from a long time of conditioning and my ego? And like, where is this thought, or is this thought coming from, like, what is the relationship to that thought and other parts of you, right? Like, even thinking about yourself and your own alter egos or your own conditioning, your inner critic versus your intuition, and knowing that like this thought right here is coming from my intuition, and it is very much tied to a feeling in my body. And what, and where is that? And even like mapping the feeling in your body to where it is in your body. Is it in my shoulders? Is it in my back? Is it in my gut? So that you can just have that awareness, name the things so you can be more aware of them and start naming the relationships between these things. Oh, this thought is from my inner critic versus this thought is from more of an inner coach or my intuition. Yeah. I mean, wow.
Well, just like the origin of it too. Like, so if anybody has been to a therapist recently, you have probably had them look at you and say, where do you feel that in your body? Which is a refrain that I hear a lot from my therapist. And over time, I learned how important that work is, because once you can identify where is this coming from in my body, you can start to connect it to your conditioning and recognizing that something that's happening in your body is because you've been conditioned to respond that way. We are still biological creatures trying to protect ourselves from dangerous situations. So just because a feeling arises does not mean that it's telling you about a fact. Often it's just giving you evidence to understand how and why you feel the way that you feel about certain things. And so naming is a huge one. Like, what is this thing? Why do we call it that? How do you define it? Because I'll say that with OUX, I've been able to ask better, deeper questions to people in my life to really understand our dynamic, to understand the relationship, because I have so much of that practice at work. What are these two things? Why do you call this thing one thing and I call it another? Is it the same thing and we're just calling it a different thing? Or are these two really different things? That has also been huge, is that it's allowed me to ask questions to understand and not just to be heard. And that's a huge part of staying calm and being able to really be curious about your life and the things that are going on in it.
Yeah, that's so cool. So like, I got a shout out to the coach that I work with, Gervais Colmos. Everybody go check out her podcast. It's All Me. I worked with her beginning of the year and then processed a bunch of stuff. And then I'm working with her again now. And so much of what I'm saying, I'm like channeling Gervais right now. But, and she says that all the time, like, where do you feel this in your body? And maybe some of it's conditioning. Maybe some of it is truly your intuition, because so much of our intuitive sense does come through our body. And also, like, how can you, instead of thinking like, I want this experience versus that experience, I want to chase this kind of feeling versus that kind of feeling. So when I'm with this type of person, I feel I feel light. I feel relaxed. I feel my shoulders drop a little bit. I feel like I can lean back. I feel like I can actually take up more space in the room. You know, I can put my arm, like even recognizing your body language when you're with certain people versus when I'm with this other type of person, I feel smaller. I feel condensed. I feel constricted. I actually even might take up less space physically when I'm with this person, and just paying attention to that and being like, where is, like, this is a thing that's happening. Let me name, again, like we're coming back, like there's a theme here, like naming that thing for awareness is, I mean, I won't call myself at all enlightened, but just like being a bit more, I don't know. It really does, I think, help you be more happy, actually, of like being able to say, like, I can have this awareness. I can separate myself from some of these things, and I can accept and trust a little bit more. It's like coming back to like that trust and confidence, like confidence 100%. In like, this is who I am. And I can actually trust that I can tell the difference now, or I am starting to learn to tell the difference between my inner critic and the thoughts that are happening there, and my feelings that are coming more from conditioning versus a feeling that is coming from intuition, and just realizing that there are different parts of ourselves and that they have relationships between them. And if you can map that out, like, magic.
Exactly. And the attribute of where am I feeling this in my body also helps you differentiate things that can often, if you're really in the flood, if you're flooded, which is another very therapy word, but if you're really flooded, it can sometimes feel hard to differentiate between two very similar things, two different feelings, two different facts, but, or two different feelings really that have a similar place that they show up in your body, but they're different because the source is different. There's other elements of it that you need to pay attention to that make it different. Like anyone who's seen the Barbie movie, there's one piece where there's one little tiny scene where she says, I feel achy, but good. And I think that that's being able to really differentiate and understand and be curious about your feelings and why they show up the way that they do can help you reach deeper depths of those feelings because you're not afraid of them anymore, because you can understand and analyze them in a way that doesn't have you trying to run from anytime your chest feels tight. You know, sometimes that can be from a good place. Sometimes it can be from a bad place. And the only way that you're going to figure that out is by sitting with it, looking at it, analyzing it, looking at all those attributes, figuring out what those values of those attributes are, and then using that to understand if it really is the same thing or if it's a different thing.
This makes me think of, have you read Brené Brown's Atlas of the Heart?
Of course I have.
Of course you have.
Ever written? Yes.
So I love that book, of course. So this book is it's a glossary, basically. It's an object guide for all the instances of feelings, and it goes through all these different feelings and emotions and starts to separate them out and talk about the relationship between them. And I like one that just like forever changed my mind, or forever changed the way that I see the world, is when she talked about how resentment is related to jealousy. Mm-hmm. And that, like, if you, and like to recognize that feeling of resentment, and it's really, it's like, it's not because you think that that person is actually doing something bad or wrong. It's might be because you wish that you could do what they were doing.
Oh, yes. And women a lot with one another, I think. If you've been conditioned for a very long time to feel like you should, quote unquote, should feel a certain way, and then you see someone else who's subverting that expectation and behaving in a very different way, that resentment can come up real fast. And it's easy to place judgment versus taking a step back and saying, why do I feel this way? Are they doing something that I wish I could do? That has really, for me as a woman, has helped separate me from that competitiveness that I think we're sometimes conditioned to have with one another, and has allowed me to connect more deeply with women specifically, because I don't have that sense of, you're doing something that society has told me all along that I'm not allowed to do. And that's been really transformative.
Yes. Yes. Like, I mean, this is like, and to recognize like, ooh, I'm getting, there's a trigger here. What are my trigger for? There's a trigger. And then there's a feeling. And then we're starting to recognize, what are those triggers? And then there's this feeling that might actually mean something or might be connected to this like this other emotion of jealousy. It's like masking. It's like jealousy is like kind of hiding underneath the resentment. Resentment feels much more holier than thou. Like I can get up on my high horse of resentment.
It's safe up there.
Jealousy. Yeah. Jealousy brings you down. Jealousy is very humbling. But to be able to recognize that and then recognize it, like, remember her talking about the difference between jealousy and envy too. Like,
ooh, yeah.
And I hope I'm not mixing these up, but jealousy is like, I want that. And I don't think you should have it. Like, I want it. Like, I want it from you. Versus envy is like, I think it's really cool that you have that. And I want it too, but I'm glad that you have it as well. I hope I'm not mixing those up.
You know, I think that's right. And I think it's a lot. And it's also something that I think is transformative when you're talking about significant others or like close family members, anyone that you're really, really close with that is having a better time maybe, or you're perceiving that they're having a better time or things are easier for them. When you really look at it, you can take a lot of data from that of like, well, how are they getting there? And when you give yourself a chance to really analyze something and take the sting of jealousy out of it, you can really see, oh, wait, this is data to show me the things that I actually want versus feeling like because they have it, you can't have it either. That's a big one is no, happiness is for everyone.
Like that, yeah.
Everyone can have this. There's more than enough for everyone. And sometimes that's a matter of really deconstructing your understanding of like, why am I having this feeling? What is it telling me about myself? Exactly.
It's the like, I mean, it's close family and friends. It's also people that you might be like seeing on Instagram or something like that. And you're like, oh my, like there's like scrolling through Instagram and feeling bad about yourself. And then they're scrolling through Instagram for inspiration. It's like, ooh, I feel envious of them, but that is interesting data versus like, why does everybody else have this and I don't have this? So it's again, it's like there's facts. There's like an image on a screen, right? And then there's my feeling and how do I connect those two? And then be aware of it and be like, ooh, I'm feeling jealousy. Like, how can I actually, and once you can name it and be like, that's what's happening, how can I even convert it to something that is more that inspirational envy, that I can say, oh, maybe it is that just like, I need more of this in my life. And then how can I go and find more of that in my life?
Your journey is your own and you have to be able to see it that way. Exactly.
So you gave a talk at Abby Covert's event, Making Sense Mess, which was amazing. The whole event was great. Highly recommend that yearly event to anybody. She did a great job putting that together and it was really, really fun. Your talk, maybe I'm biased, but I think you just blew everybody away. I know we've been talking a lot about these themes and like dancing around, but can you break down a little bit? Like, first, is that recording available?
I think it is. I will have to probably go find it. It's one of those things on my to-do list. Yes, I believe it is available. I need to go track it down. Hopefully we can make it available on OUX.
Yeah. So we'll make it available. We'll link it in the show notes if we can find it. If not, I'm like, re-record it. It was a short talk, maybe like 20 minutes or something. So
real short. So I was talking about basically using the ORCA method, the concept of objects, relationships, calls to action and attributes, and using my experience through therapy, where the refrain was my goddamn therapist, to really understand how I was able to back up and look at my life as a system and look at my own journey as a system and the control that I actually had over how that system worked and the entities that were in it and how they would relate to one another. So I was really looking at the objects, like what is a feeling? What is a fact? What is like a bodily sensation? Those types of things. Understanding how they were different from one another, and then really mapping out the relationships between those two things. But beyond that, looking at the calls to action, what could I actually do about it? As well as what were these things made up of? And I think the most empowering piece of it for me, walking through objects, what are these facts and feelings in my life? Relationships, how are these two things related? How do they impact one another? And then the calls to action. What could I actually do about it? I could set a boundary, which created a brand new object in the system called boundary. or how can I change the way that this relationship works? Then finally looking at the attributes of all those things and understanding what kind of data do I need to be gathering about these things that happen in my life so that over time I can have a deeper understanding of myself, a deeper understanding of the people around me, and can have more a sense of calm and control over my own life, which was really delineating between where do I have control and where do I not. I am one single entity within that system, within that experience. Mm-hmm. It was only a 10-minute talk. We kept it really simple, didn't go into a lot of depth with the ORCA process because I really wanted people to see that this applies everywhere, because ORCA, OUX, is systems thinking. And when you start to really look at the world, you realize everything is systems. There's a really great book called Thinking in Systems by Danella Meadows, which is a fabulous book that looks at systems theory in general. And being able to apply that through the lens of ORCA as a way to actually map it out was huge. So that's what I really wanted to be able to show was, you know, the way that we create systems every day with the people around us, with our families, with our friends, with our job. And we are ultimately in control of how those systems are built and how they're constructed. That was really the takeaway piece, that and telling them about my goddamn therapist who kept asking me where I felt things in my body. And a lot of fun. Yeah. And honestly, just even writing that talk, having done all that work, just writing that talk was really transformative too, because I discovered, oh, wait, yeah, these boundaries. Wait, that's a new item in this. That's a new object in this system that I hadn't even really mapped out yet because I was still learning that skill. So it's even evolved beyond that because a system is never done. Design is never done. I'm still working on that system.
And teach what you need to learn, right? I say this all the time for people, like one of the biggest benefits to public speaking is you have to organize your thoughts to teach somebody else something. And as you organize your thoughts, you discover new things.
Well, that happens. Yeah.
So I'm curious also, like, one thing that I've been playing around with, and I'll just like, actually, I want to back up here to like when I first started thinking about this. It was a lot less magical than how you came to it, but I started thinking about it as far as portfolios, because people were coming to me for UX portfolio advice, and they would come to me to show me their portfolio, and they would have one object, which would be projects or case studies. And so they had two little things in their navigation. It would be about me, which would have their little bio, and then projects. And then they would, you click on a project and you'd see everything about that project. And the more and more I thought, I was like, you know, there's like the projects within your portfolio, but there's also like how you are presenting it. And can you create it? Can you make it more of an experience? Can you make it a bit richer? And is your portfolio in a way like a reflection of your professional self? And a reflection of your professional self is way more than just your projects. So I only ran this workshop once, but it was OUXing your portfolio. And the first thing people did is they were noun forging. I had a bunch of cards, but I was like, what are the things that really make up you? So it's like past jobs, but also books that you love or quotes that you love that actually describe you, or even testimonials about you or skills that you have. Is skill an object so that you can start mapping skill to your different projects? Does a project actually have many articles about it? Like could you have, like, even if a UX portfolio just like had like four objects instead of the one object, it would be such a richer experience and actually present yourself more. So like, yeah, actually like present who you are in a much richer way. So that's like how I actually started thinking about it, was just very like practically of like thinking about it, OUXing your portfolio.
Background, but yes, funnily enough, one of the things that I was doing around the same time was OUXing my portfolio.
Oh.
Skills and abilities and projects and companies that I'd worked for. And yes. Yeah, like all those things, the more that you start to really recognize that the projects that you work on give rise to skills and give rise to technical ability, give rise to the different people that you connect with and what that teaches you about yourself and your abilities. And I think when you go into an interview, any kind of interview, especially a job interview, You need to be able to tell that story. And it's so much bigger than just the projects that you worked on. It's what did you learn from the project? What skills did you build upon? What does that tell you about yourself and your ability to interact with other people? Being able to tell a richer story around your portfolio is one of the most important things that you need to be able to do as a designer. So funnily enough, I actually talk a lot about UXing your portfolio. And it's funny because it ends up teaching you a lot about yourself, because it teaches you, what things am I picking up on? Why did I learn these things? Why are these the skills that I built up versus things that I didn't? Or sometimes past beliefs that you let go of in those projects, I think, can also be huge. Mistakes that you made, huge things that can really tell somebody who you are in the context of your work. So I think it's great that portfolio work is probably the 1-2 step to OOUXing your life. So if anybody's out there is about to OOUX your portfolio, get ready, because it's going to tell you some stuff about your life. And before you know it, you might be OOUXing the inside of your own brain.
Yeah. I mean, you said it like this is like, I brought it up because this is how my thinking started. And I think that like for a lot of the things we've been talking about have been a little bit esoteric, but like, gloriously esoteric. But to be able to say like, hey, if you're listening and you want to start doing this, like start with your portfolio, just start with your like professional life. It's like a really good sort of like in to realizing like how much more can come out of this. And this idea again, like there's like you mentioned mistakes that you've made. Like, is that a local object within the case study? Or is it like, do you want to show that like, oh, I made this mistake twice, like showing up in multiple places? Like realizing that these things are separate, like even like client and project. Like for me, this is something that I'm not doing very well on Rewired UX. I really want to re-OOUX that one. But like client and project, separating those is so key, because I want to show that I have repeat clients, that clients come back to me. And to be able to really tell that story, I need to have some sort of client page that shows, here's the 3 or 4 projects that I was hired to do for this client. But again, you have to like, to come back to our theme, you have to sort of separate those things out and realize that client isn't just like some content that we're going to stick inside of a project. It's Absolutely. Its own entity that has a relationship to the project.
Especially because projects over time with the same client will teach you a lot about yourself as well as that client. In many cases, I like to tell the story of how projects over time with a single client built got better, because I learned more about what the client needed, what they wanted. I was able to listen to them. And so that is a really impactful story that you can tell, where it's not just the work that you're doing, it's how and why you approached it the way that you did, which is the way to really differentiate yourself in terms of interviewing. If anybody is out on the job market right now, it is a tough time in tech. So a big thing about your portfolio and positioning yourself is understanding that. Who are you in relation to the brands that you work with, the clients that you work with, the projects that you've worked on, and the skills that you've built around them? Those relationships and being able to define and really explain those relationships is the way that you differentiate yourself. That's what makes you different.
What's up, OUXers? There is something very important that I have neglected to do in the first 50 episodes of this podcast, and that is to implore you, dear listener, for a review. So here I am, asking ever so nicely for you to drop a rating and review of the OUX podcast into either Apple Podcasts or Spotify. This can really help us spread the OUX love. So if you've gotten any value from OUX and the Orca process, which I'm assuming you have since you're here, I'd be so appreciative for a few minutes of your time. Okay, so how to do this? Don't actually go click on the rating metadata, because that would be way too intuitive. On Apple Podcasts, go to the podcast detail page, scroll to the bottom, and you'll see some big stars down there that you can add stars. And then underneath that, there is another little link that says create a review. So that would be amazing. And on Spotify, you've got to do this on the mobile. On Spotify mobile, go to the 3-dot menu on that detail page and hit rate. And actually on Spotify, even on an episode detail, you can leave a comment there too. If you scroll down on the episode detail, there'll be something that says something like, how did you like this episode? And feel free to put your thoughts there.
Thank you so much and happy OUXing.
Like, I love the idea. And I need to practice what I'm preaching here, but like a book, like having a junction object between you and a book, right? So this is not just the book. This is my interpretation of this book. And I can only imagine as an employer or a hiring manager, looking at the books and being like, oh my gosh, like I loved that book too. And like, here's all the takeaways that this person got from the book, because so much of what we do is self-taught, you know, just to know that somebody is enthusiastic about UX and that this is where are you reading more information architecture stuff? Are you reading more psychology stuff? Are like, what are you taking into your mind? And then how are you interpreting that? Like that to me is like almost equally as valuable as the projects that you worked on. Like it shows initiative, it shows how you're interpreting it. And it also can show a way, like it can be that connection, that connecting piece of like, I read that book too, and I also love that book and had similar takeaways.
Yeah, or totally different takeaways, seeing that somebody has a different perspective, can see things differently. Hopefully nobody's trying to hire a bunch of the same person on team who's going to be another piece of that pie. And in order to do that, they need to see how your perspective around the same things could be different. What do you bring to the table that's unique despite having the same thing in the center, like the same project, the same book, being able to have some overlap, but not completely, that Venn diagram with a little bit of overlap, but it's not a circle. That's what is really, I think, hiring managers are looking for is how does this person fit in with this larger story? And that's really about understanding yourself and your relationship to the things.
I mean, even just like looking at, like, I think that we don't even bring that awareness of, wait, okay, let me actually look at all the professional books that I'm reading. Holy moly, 80% of them are about psychology. That's what I end up just realizing that, be like, oh, I really gravitate to the psychology piece, or I'm actually gravitating to like way more technical stuff. Like, and yeah. When it comes to portfolios, I always say like, you get the work you show. So like even the projects, like which like show the projects you're most excited about, and to like really, again, like have that awareness of like, who am I and how can I express all these parts of myself and the relationship between all the parts?
Yeah. And not trying to be everything all at once. You're best when you know what you're good at and what you know what you're not good at and what you want to build upon. And that's huge. Again, everyone should just OUX the hell out of their own life, because you will learn so much about yourself just by writing it down, mapping it out, visualizing it. Absolutely.
So do you have another few minutes?
Because we are...
Okay, because one other thing, if we can go back into that, we got to the practical, we started out esoteric, then we got practical. I want to take us back down to the esoteric side.
But
but also like super freaking IA nerdy, two nerds talking about their feelings. I want to talk about instances and mapping the relationship of instances, because this is a new thing. So I really started exploring this. I did an OUX happy hour on this, which we will link to. And then also I did a follow-up video on this on nomming my joys. So doing a nested object matrix. And so the happy hour was all just on the nested object matrix and using it in all these different ways. And many of them were more personal ways. And one thing that's really interesting is you can take a nested object matrix, like the traditional nested object matrix that we teach in the masterclass and in the certification, is you take all of the objects. So you take all the cookie cutters. So you would take, in our world here, you would take thoughts, feelings, people, boundaries. And then down the y-axis, you would have thoughts, feelings, people, boundaries. And you would start mapping the kind of canonical relationships between those things. Like a person creates many thoughts for me. A person has many thoughts. A person creates many feelings. A person has many feelings, right? A person has many boundaries that I've set against them. Like, so you would start doing this like really kind of like, you know, high level system. But then there's this other thing you can do with a nested object matrix, is you could actually take the instances. So like people is a good example. Like somebody made the joke that I love. This was like, right, I think this was the October meetup. And somebody was saying like, oh, you could do all your family members and to help you figure out how to do this, the seating at the Thanksgiving dinner table, like who shouldn't sit next to who. So you take mom, dad, stepmom, sister-in-law, blah, 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 and then you map them and their feelings to each other. And so I did this with the YouTube video, the short one that we'll link, is me doing this for my joys, like identifying like what are the biggest joys of my life. So it was like nature, travel, art. Let's just take those, nature, travel, art. And then I would say, okay, nature, travel, art by nature, travel, art. How can I mix them up more? Like, how can I, like, one thing that came out of it, just for an example, was that, like, when I'm traveling, I should really make more of an effort to go to a museum, even if it's just for 30 minutes or something. And also, like, as I'm traveling around, step into galleries. I realized that I was felt intimidated to step into galleries because I probably wasn't going to buy anything. But that, like, how can I mix travel and art more? How can I mix travel and nature more? Like really realizing, like when I'm traveling, I like a little bit of time in the city, maybe to see those art galleries, but then I really like, I should be prioritizing getting out into nature while I'm traveling. So nomming the instances of a thing is really mm-hmm. interesting. Have you done any of that?
Yes, with feelings. So I did that
with feelings.
Yeah, because here's why, is because understanding and differentiating between very similar feelings, but understanding how and why they are the way that they are is really important. Like, I'm going to come back to Barbie for a second and her saying it feels achy, but good. There are things that feel achy and bad. Mm-hmm. And it's important to pay attention to the difference between that and achy and good. As an avoidant attacher, you know, that's me with an asterisk. As an avoidant attacher, anything that felt even a little too intense or overwhelming would often set off this, no, I need to get away from this feeling. And what I learned over time is by really differentiating between nostalgia and what's one that's similar to nostalgia? Nostalgia and like grief. Mm. Very similar. They show up really similar for me in terms of how I feel them. But the way that I feel after them is different. Nostalgia kind of creates this connectedness that I have with the people around me and the experiences that I have. It allows me to create more meaning around those experiences. Whereas grief, yes, grief is really important, but it aches in a different way. And mm-hmm. so being able to really understand how similar feelings can feel very much the same. They can show up in the same general area of your body, but there's all this other information around it that helps you understand which feelings you don't want or which feelings are quote unquote bad versus good, and the enormous spectrum in between. That has been really important, especially with interacting with other people. Some people bring up challenging emotions, but they're not bad emotions, versus others that bring up challenging emotions that are not good. Mm-hmm. And if you're healing from codependency, if you're healing from being a people pleaser, that can be really important work. Just because someone is challenging you does not necessarily make it bad. Just because someone is telling you something that you've heard before doesn't make it good. Sometimes you have to take the time to really understand that feeling, why it's showing up the way that it is, and the impact that it has on you, to not be so afraid of your own feelings. And that's where growth and depth comes from, is the ability to open up your capacity for feeling deeper and more intense emotions and really understanding, okay, I'm going to let myself feel this thing that feels achy and hard, but I know that it's a positive thing for me in the end, because it's going to give me more access to deeper parts of myself, versus no, this person makes me feel consistently bad about myself and it makes me retract in on myself mm-hmm. and has this impact on my life. I did that a lot with feelings. I still do it all the time, I think, in my own head, but sometimes I'll do it in Miro sometimes. And then it also gives you, by doing that, I created a lot more attributes associated with feelings. A feeling is wildly complex. It's where you feel in your body. It's what happens afterward. It's what impact it has on your relationships with other people. The more you understand every single attribute, the richer experience you can have with your emotions, because you can let more in. And so that has been, I highly recommend anyone to sit down, nom your feelings, nom
yes.
the shit, because you will find so much that you didn't realize you need to know, more data that you need to gather about your feelings in order to really differentiate between them. And you have to give yourself the space to do that data gathering. And that can sometimes be hard if you don't have a framework for doing it. Orca is a great framework for doing it. Doing a NOM, looking at your object map, saying, do I have enough attributes to meaningfully differentiate between these different instances? Really, really important. Highly recommend.
That's, I mean, I like a feeling that I just identifying the feelings, like, again, naming them. Like, I, with working with Gervais, realized that, like, one of my big ones, which comes from a lot of underlying beliefs and conditioning, is feeling behind. Feeling behind and feeling unheard. Those were two of them. I literally created an entire business around making sure that I'm heard. And this goes way back to childhood, of all the important people around me, doing the best that they can and love them to death, but not giving my voice a whole lot of space. Lots of people that were over talkers, talking over me. I was surrounded by pretty poor listeners, actually. And then that also, I had to realize that I then had to learn myself how to become a better listener because I didn't have really good modeling for it. So like sometimes like talking really loud, like there was all the like kind of sort of overcompensating for being like, oh my gosh, like this belief that it's hard to be heard, that it's a challenge to be heard, that I'm not going to be heard unless I try really hard. And mapping that to other things, like how does that relate to feeling behind? Ooh. How does that relate to other areas of my life? How does it manifest? So I actually had a matrix of like, okay, here's all these feelings that come up. And then going to the attributes, mapping out, and this is using a lot of Gervais's framework of like, okay, what are the triggers for that feeling? What are the reactionary cycles? Mm-hmm. So, and what is my chosen cycle? So like actually defining and writing out, like this is how I usually react to that. How can I choose to react differently? What would a different reaction look like? And she also has it. This is also like, I just took her framework and I was like, I'm just going to put this all in a matrix because I need to write this all. It's like an amazing way of filling in the blank journaling of like, here's all these feelings that are coming up, these feelings that I don't necessarily want to feel as much anymore or as deeply anymore. I want to like understand these feelings a little bit more, feeling unheard, right? Because I have a lot of reactionary cycles around that. And then also looking at what parts of me can I burn down? Like what parts of me do I need to let go of? And what parts are going to grow from that compost? So there was like this whole level of attributes for every single one that gave me this framework to explore and to realize the interactions between them. And it was transformative.
Well, yeah, breaking cycles is something you hear a lot about. Like in therapy is like, you want to break a cycle. I'm the same. I grew up not feeling heard. And then that turned me into, in many ways, someone who wasn't great at listening. Mm-hmm. But I would not have arrived at that place and realizing that that was an area of growth for me had I not done the work around why, what is this feeling of being unheard and frustrated? And where is that coming from? In order to break a cycle, you have to see the cycle. You have to see it in mm-hmm. order to break it. And so I think that for us information architecture nerds, sometimes writing it down, putting some boxes and arrows around it can help you see it for what it is and can help you make a different decision because feelings and facts and actions, not the same thing. Just because you feel one feeling does not mean it always has to be attached to this other action. You can make the decision about what happens next. But in order to do that, you need to know what's actually happening. You need to map it out first. So it's funny that we both have that same thing. I bet there's a lot of OUXers out there that probably are gravitating toward OUX for a very similar reason of, yeah. I don't feel heard. I can see these things happening, but I can't make a good case for it. How can I see it better so I can explain it better? That's what OUX does for sure.
Gosh, yeah. It's just so funny to kind of like, again, like, look at your life and get that little bit of distance from it and detach a bit and be like, oh, that's the reason I am the way that I am. Interesting. Let me get curious. Let me have fun with it. Let me actually like play with these things a little bit. That's another thing about the Orca process. It is very playful. And so this work can be painful and deep, right? But if you can bring a sense of playfulness, if you're just putting them on little sticky notes and moving them around, it can take a little bit of the sting out of some of these things that could be potentially really, really painful to zhuzh up and unearth from your past. You can get that curiosity and that playfulness.
Absolutely. Yeah, you are a system, and systems are not inherently good or bad. They are just a set of entities that are working together to form a unified whole. If you look at your brain and your reactions that way, it makes it a lot easier to make the kinds of changes that you want to make, not by shaming yourself, but by being curious about how and why you think and behave the way that you do, so that it'll give you that insight to be able to make those changes in the future.
Yeah. Okay. So time check on you, because this is like such an awesome conversation, and I have one more thing I want to talk about.
Let's do it.
Okay. So another object that I have recognized that I've been obsessed with over the past couple of weeks is something I'm calling polarizing traits. So to define a polarizing trait, let's go through our little object guide. To define a polarizing trait is something that you've identified that you actually like about yourself. You're like, no, you know what? That's fucking cool. I like it. But it is not for everyone. Not everyone is going to like that. And that's okay. So defining one's polarizing traits, and then there's other people, like your people are going to adore you for it, right? So finding one's polarizing traits and mapping out, this is the structure. So I found a few of them, one of them, I like going deep, right? I like philosophizing. I like talking about shit like this. I like talking about feelings. And I'm like, I'm not very good at small talk. I'm like, let's pull the layers back. Like, let's get into it. And that is not for everyone. That is exhausting to some people, or that's just not for everyone in their time of their life, right? Like, that actually was not me in my 20s, right? I wasn't there yet. I wasn't at the point where I wanted to have these deeper conversations. Now I'm at the point in my life, I'm like, I don't have time for anything else. Like, let's just get into it. I do not have time for small talk with you. So I ask lots of personal questions. I like to pull your Karen's like, yes.
Yeah.
And one thing that I found is when you share polarizing traits with people, that usually is what brings you together. So like, it's really hard for me to connect with somebody that really just wants to talk about, you know, like the surface level, right? Or if I try to get in deep, we kind of like go up to the surface. So that was one of my I realized, like, hey, I really like this about myself. I don't want to change this. I also love solving problems. This can be polarizing for people, especially when they bring me their problems. I'm like, ooh, let's play with it. Like, I want a solution, and I'm going to solution in a way that is like not telling you that you can't do it, or that I don't, you know, that I'm judging you that you're doing it wrong. I just like to play. So anyway, I came up with this list of like seven things, and I'm like, I can see how other people would not like that. And so coming up with your polarizing traits and then defining them, how do they actually manifest? So now we're getting into attributes. So how does that polarizing trait manifest? How can I amplify it? Like, how can I even lean into this more? How can I amplify it? What do I need to watch out for? What are ways where this polarizing trait can be a little bit less elegant than I want it to be? That people can get the wrong idea about it? That maybe I can, it's not about quieting it, because I want to amplify it actually, but what kind of things do I need to watch out for to make sure people are interpreting this polarizing trait in the right way? So with solutioning, for me to be like, hey, I just want you to like first asking like, hey, can I play with this a little bit? Like, and then also reassuring the person that I am not telling you that you can't do this on your own, right? That like, I am not trying to say like, oh, and also I'm not going to be offended if you don't take my advice or don't enjoy my perspective. If anything, tell me that my perspective is unrealistic for what you're dealing with, because that's going to help me learn more about you. And I'm excited to hear that. So like just the framing, right? So, and then also, what kind of traits do you look for in other people that will?
Yes.
Yeah. And so defining all these polarizing traits, defining the attributes of a polarizing trait, this was like what's some of the most mind-blowing journaling that I've ever done. And if this is if anybody can tell me a better self-love exercise, like, let me know what it is. Like, really, it helped me fall in love with myself so much more and realize how I can be more of an authentic version of myself, while also being a more mature, sort of refined, like, what is the like amplification strategy for this polarizing trait? But on the other side, what is the refinement strategy for this polarizing trait? And I'll start talking because I really want to hear you think about this, but then also two other things, doing an nested object matrix of them. Yes. How do my polarizing traits work together? How do they amplify each other? How do they relate to each other? And then the junction object of another person in your life with a polarizing trait. How does this polarizing trait work or not work with my husband, with my mother, with my best friend?
Mm-hmm.
And what are some strategies around that?
Taking the value out of those things. This is what's really, it's so funny that you're bringing this up because it's something that I've really had to do a lot of work around is, hey, I'm not for everyone. And you hear a lot of people say that, like, I'm not everybody's cup of tea, da, da, da. But I think what it really means is that there's such a thing as alignment. Not everyone is going to bring out the things in you that you want. And not everyone is going to find you to be, is going to get the things out of being around you that they want. And that is okay. That's a big one, is that I think when you, especially if you're like finding yourself in kind of a transitional part of your life, which is certainly something that I'm in right now, and kind of putting yourself around new people, figuring out how do I feel around these people, and learning how, and this is a big part of codependency, is learning how to accept that there are parts about yourself that just because they don't work for everyone does not make them bad.
Yes.
This person is this way or needs this thing or is in this place does not make them bad. It just means it's misaligned. Mm-hmm. And once you look at things from the view of alignment versus, oh no, these are good things and bad things, which I think is very much an American culture thing. We love the binary of good and bad, good and evil, right and wrong. Once you take it out of that, space, you find that you're so much more empowered to put yourself around people that value those things about yourself. Mm-hmm. And also gives you a little space to feel like, okay, you know, I can actually adapt some of the ways that I approach this person because I know that this polarizing trait is really hard for them, but not in a bad way. Like, oh, okay, this is something that's going to be tough for them because they have their own polarizing traits or they have their own traits that I need to be aware of, versus trying to change the polarizing trait completely, trying to get rid of it. Just being like, oh, this has accelerators and brakes. Like I can amp this up. I can pull it back for the people in my life that I care about, that I know that this can be challenging. It gives, especially for women, and I keep coming back to this, but especially for women, I think it can be really powerful of saying, no, I don't have to make myself palatable for this person. They might not be aligned with me, and that is okay. It is
massive realization. It took me to turn 40 years old to realize this. And like, if anybody, like, I'm like, if you can learn this sooner, then you'll just be like, you'll save yourself so much grief. Because I think, again, as women, I'm sure this happens to men too, but we go into situations and it's like, we're scanning the room. Who do I need to be in this situation? Who do I need to be so that the most people possible will like me?
Yes.
And instead of being like, how the goal here is not to be liked by everybody, but to present my most authentic self, present those polarizing traits as beautifully as I possibly can and put them in tune as much as I can. Right. So that people can make decisions about me and we don't waste each other's time. And, yes. If you don't have alignment, if you don't have chemistry, it's not your fault. Like it's not the other person's fault either. It's just like, you're not going to have chemistry with everybody. That would be exhausting if you had chemistry with everybody. No one's got time for that.
Like the idea of everyone liking you, it's like, oh my God, that's so much work. And also I think when you are more centered, and I always call it as like centered and more aligned with the people around you, it gives other people permission to align as well. Like if you are able to calmly say, you know, I don't think that we align, or, hey, we align really well. It's incredible how it creates this sense of space for people to be who they are, because you're not in competition. You're just looking for alignment. And that really takes so much weight off your shoulders of, you don't have to be things that you are not. You can just focus on who you are and amplifying or tailoring those things to maintain healthy relationships with the people around you. Yeah, that's a big one, I think, especially with codependency, is that the impulse to be everything to everyone all the time is very real. And the older you get, and less energy, frankly, that you have to do that kind of thing, the better off you are, because you can see, look, there are 7 billion people in the world. Am I going to align with every single one of them? Absolutely not. There's someone for everyone. There's a space for everyone. It's just a matter of paying attention to how you feel, understanding what that means so that you can find the places and the people and the situations that you feel most aligned with.
Drop the mic. Yes. So I'm going to close this up. I'm actually going to bring this back a little bit to OUX. I mean, we've been talking about OUX has been a strong thread. Yes. But like I'm thinking right now, and it's like, you know, I'm recognizing my own desire for everyone to get on board with OOUX and my frustration that like, come on, don't y'all see the value? Okay, I do think that OOUX is for every single organization designing digital products. Is OOUX for every person? And I have to acknowledge that it's not, right? Mm-hmm. Some people it clicks with, it makes sense to. I think every team should have an OOUXer on it, right? I can't get rid of that. I can't let go of that desire yet and that thought. But it is not for everybody. Not everybody's going to get it, right? Mm-hmm. And this is something that I've been, you know, I don't know if anybody listening has heard this, but like I've really tried to stop convincing people. I'm like, I'm going to say, what's up, OUXers? I'm going to speak to people who are already thinking these thoughts and in it and really just create amazing content and products and services for those people. Because it isn't for everybody. And realizing that is tough. It's tough.
Yeah. And it's a different, I think the people that find their way into OUX, like a lot of my mentees, I mean, there's a certain quality about people that come to OUX and then stick all the way through that program. Mm-hmm. Masterclass is tough, but in such a positive way. And the people that feel compelled to connect with it, to learn it, there's something in them that compels them to do so. And without that inner thing that gets people through it, like not everybody's going to be super into it. I talk a lot about the T. You need to have the broad understanding of like systems thinking, and then having one person, two people, three people on a team that are deep OUXers, but apply it in different ways can be huge. Do you need everyone to be able to do that? Probably not. Do you need everyone to have a basic understanding of systems design? Because here we are designing systems. Yes, probably. But OUX is really a methodology that is attached to the broader concept of systems thinking. Mm-hmm. Not everyone is going to find as much value out of it as you do. I think it's a big reason why speaking, talking about it, doing quiet OUX, but by quiet, I mean, let people know what you're doing. Don't force them into it. The right people will be curious. The right mm-hmm. people will say, tell me more about this. I want to understand how you got here. And those are the people that you know you can bring along with you. It's a great way to go into an organization, just centering, knowing who you are, knowing what your polarizing traits are, knowing the ways that you can amplify and tailor them. Then you will find your people in the organization that can help be the vehicle for getting OUX adopted on a broader scale without expecting every single person at your organization to become certified OUXers. That's probably not realistic, but finding the right people across different teams that can work together to bring the best parts of it into the organization, that's possible. So centering, understanding who you are and what you bring to the table is a huge part of, I think, getting it adopted at an organization with your team.
I feel like we just brought this full circle, and it's amazing that we didn't plan this podcast at all, because I don't know, I'm brushing my shoulders off over here. I've been pretty good about it. I'm like, we really did. Like, OUX is one of those polarizing traits. Like, if you're the type of person, hopefully it's not too polarizing. You can amplify it in a way and also refine it so it's not polarizing. But like, it is the thing that's like, it's a skill that not everybody, it's not going to click for everybody. And if you are here and you're listening and you're still listening to this, like, probably pretty long podcast, if you're still here with us, like, you're an OUXer, like, welcome.
You found your people.
I mean, you've probably been here for a long time, but like, yes, you found your people. And like the last thing I'll say is like, the riches are in the niches. I love saying the riches are in the niches. And that comes with personality, like niching down as a person. Like, I would so much rather have 10 people absolutely adore me because they see me fully than 100 people like think that I'm nice, right? 100%. Like, riches are in the niches when it comes to your polarizing traits and who you are and authenticity, also within your professional world too. So if OUX is the type of thing that resonates, like come on in, come deeper in, because there's a whole community of people that have like that je ne sais quoi, that spark, right? That brings us all together.
Exactly. Exactly. You found your people if you're still listening to this podcast.
Yes.
For sure.
Yes. We're your people. We're your people. Forum.oux.com. There will be conversations there and pictures of animals. Maybe Mr. Pickles will show up on the OUX forum. What a cutie. All right, Karen. It's been an absolute joy. I feel like we could go forever, but thank you for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so much, very deep and very fun. I hope that the people that are listening found this esoteric, very long, windy conversation as enjoyable as I did. I had a really
start
great
off. OUX your portfolio, figure out your polarizing traits, separate your thoughts and your feelings and the facts and people, map it all out.
Yes. Find alignment.
Find alignment. Cheers. Happy OUXing.
Thanks. Bye, y'all.
Bye. Thank you so much for listening. I truly hope you enjoyed this episode. Please visit objectorientux.com/podcast for show notes. Our soundtrack is Fighter by Ruby Vell, courtesy of Sugaroo Records. Happy OUXing!